and welcome. This is La Liga Weekly, but we've got 38 goals to discuss, and only one of them was a penalty. One. And I've gone through the footage. I can only find two inexplicable red cards in this whole round of games. What has happened to Spanish referees? That and other questions will be discussed with Terry Gibson, such as if Levante had scored zero goals and Betis had conceded zero goals, then how come the match finished 5-2? And are we absolutely certain that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is 37? And why have Barcelona turned to Jesus? There we are. That's it. I've been ill this weekend, Terry, so I've caught up with it all now. We were waiting anyway till Tuesday because Barcelona were playing Monday night. It was worth waiting for Barcelona. Top two are flying. But this business of the refereeing, the management of the game is something that we've discussed an awful lot on our podcasts in recent years. Goals flying in everywhere. Just the one penalty, which was the controversial one at Osasuna Getafe. That's the only one that is very reminiscent of recent seasons in the league. Everywhere else, goals are flying in. And is it? I mean, you've been commentating, you've been out there. How much of that is the new regulations? How much has impacted La Liga?
Yeah, I've been saying it a couple of weeks now, and I've seen a clear evidence that the referees, the instruction is really be convinced there's a foul. Stop giving the pointless fouls every 45 seconds that break the game up. Then the player stays down, and in some cases, the player was staying down to try and instigate a further look at a challenge. You know, could it be more than just a free kick? Is there a yellow? Is there a red card there? And I've noticed, and do you know what? I think the players are responding to it pretty quickly. They're not flopping to the ground as easy anymore. It still happens, but not. It's largely being ignored, and the players quickly pick up on it. Also, that the new law where if the player stays down injured and gets treatment, he has to go off. That's clearly speeding the game up as well, because you do still old habits die hard. So occasionally you see a player flop to the ground, he's had an arm in the chest and he goes down holding his face. Most cases now the referees are spotting it and ignoring it. And the player will stay down and looks like he's crying. And then all of a sudden they think, I'll better get up. Yeah, and they have to swallow their pride. They have to get up and carry on with the game. So I think I'm really pleased with how it's going. You still get the odd game, the odd referee that's a little bit more inclined to give those cheap fouls. But it's something I've been arguing about for a long time. And it goes back to Busquets. It goes back that long. Remember Busquets just stopping the ball in the centre circle, putting his back into a player when he was shielding it, falling forwards, and the referee's giving the free kick. And constantly, it wasn't just him, but I remember him, that's how far back it goes, that it was easy to buy a free kick in La Liga. And it's not so easy now. And I think it's making a big difference to the game.
Yeah, and the general behaviour is better as well. I know we're 3 weeks into this, 3 games into the season, so let's not draw too many big conclusions. We could be having a very different conversation in a month or two's time. But I think the early signs are good, aren't they? That the games are flowing, and then a load of goals this weekend. So far so good, really.
It stops me banging on every 5 minutes going, it's not a foul. That's not a foul.
The classic one was the Bellingham goal in the rail, which we do that again, might as well roll into that game.
Exactly.
That first, where who's the Malaga player? He holds him off, doesn't he, as he's running towards him. And his hand goes probably collarbone kind of area, doesn't it? And it gives him a shove. And they're running together. And he probably is a strong fella, Bellingham, so it probably does knock him back a little bit. But then he goes down holding his face. Not injured in the slightest. He's thinking the VAR will have a look at that and will disallow any goal that might be scored.
Exactly. That was the perfect example. And it wasn't a foul. I mean, what's the point of having, this is not just Bellingham, upper body strength that you work on.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to hold off an opponent who's trying to foul you, incidentally. They're trying to, he's dribbling past two or three players. He's holding them off. The arms go out to protect, to hold people off. That's why you work on, you know, your upper body strength. And there was nothing more than that in it. When the goal was scored and then the player's down injured and then you're looking and thinking, oh, I wonder if they're going to disallow. Was there a foul? I didn't think there was. Then you think, that's ridiculous. It's not a foul. VAR's done its job. But that was the perfect example of how a player, and it happened that in other games as well, the hand across the chest and they go down holding their face as if they've been Pole-X. But in this case, that was the perfect example of a referee making the right call at the time, because there would have been someone who might have blown up before Bellingham dribbled and continued the run and scored. But it clearly was in a foul, and that was pleasing to see. And Real
Yes.
Madrid were excellent again.
Yeah, I mean, Bellingham, we discussed Bellingham last week being fantastic. He scored that first goal where he kept on running and running and running and then eventually slotted it in. His header led to the second goal that ended up as an OG by the keeper, didn't it? And then Mbappe scored a brilliant goal. They got another one late on. Malaga had chances in and moments in the game, but 4-0 and flying in the last couple of games, Real Madrid.
They are. I think the reaction in Spain, where I've been for most of the last week, is not slightly, is very over the top, but it's to be expected. But we were saying similar things last season with Xabi Alonso when he went and started off the season in really good form. I kind of feel with them and Barcelona, they're kind of sparring at the moment because they're playing teams that they are expected to beat, and chopping and changing the teams, getting everybody fit and up to speed, players coming back at different times. Trent Alexander-Arnold was one of the changes in this game. I thought he did himself a real big favour, to be honest. And you kind of look at it and you think, actually, he's a good option when you're playing it, with all due respect to Malaga, a newly promoted team, let's say that, at home, and you can have more of the ball in the attacking half. It kind of makes sense to make the most of Trent Alexander's attributes. And his crossing, passing, his overall performance was a real good 8 out of 10 performance, which will probably leave, he won't be leaving in this transfer window. There was talk that, he might not be starting. So what's his future? Could he go back to Liverpool? We've heard some of that this week. I think after that performance, he did himself a real big favour with Jose Mourinho, and he's going to be an asset to Real Madrid this season. But I kind of feel there's a sparring I'm seeing in Spain. Is this Mourinho's team better than anything that Ancelotti did and Zidane and Xabi Alonso and Arbeloa, the recent ones you can compare to? And I'm thinking, just calm down. It's, you've played, was it Malaga, Espanyol, Real Sociedad? Real Sociedad and Malaga at home, Espanyol away, late winner at Espanyol, which was a tough game. I just, yeah, it's that time of the season where if you get to the international break without dropping points, that you, I mean, it's different. We've got Madrid derby before the international break. That will be the first real test. I think it's at the Metropolitano. So that's the first real big test for Real Madrid. I'm not so sure Barcelona have got a massive test before the international break. And Atleti will already drop points, but that was against Villarreal at home. Atleti are probably the team that are suffering the most in terms of no Sorloth. Alvarez is an issue. Griezmann's left. So I think at the moment they're kind of, I kind of feel Real Madrid and Barcelona are sparring. They're getting up to speed. They're using league games as almost like the continuation of pre-season because they're playing teams they should beat, rotating the teams heavily. And it's it, but Real Madrid are they're a joy to watch. I mean, I just wished Jose would look like they're a joy to watch. He's had this lengthy period away from the club and away from a big job and away from winning things. And a lengthy period away from managing players of the likes of Mbappe. Bellingham is playing awesome at the moment. Vinicius is bringing on Arda Güler. There's so much talent there. When you're 3-0 up at home against Malaga and you're cruising, and you look at him on the bench, it looks like they're 3-0 down and he's on the verge of getting the sack. So I really encourage him to enjoy this period because it's something he should be. He's 63 years old. He should be. If he can't enjoy this stage of his career and stage of his life, I'd like to see him sitting there at 3-0 up with a big grin on his face and enjoying it, just sitting back and not having the pressure of, oh, I've got to make a change because we're only 3-0 and I want to keep a clean sheet. Just sit back and enjoy it. And there's a lot of work to do this season for him, but at this moment in time, they're a joy to watch. And I hope the manager is enjoying it as much as we are.
Yes. Yeah, it's a nice little period, isn't it? I mean, we were critical, and I think rightly, of the weird stuttering start of the season, but we are into the Champions League next week. The Champions League is long and relentless, and so there's a lot more challenges to come. And both of the big teams have started. Oh, sorry, that's not fair. The two giant clubs have started. Have started as they would have wanted. So Barcelona, so Real Madrid got four, Barcelona got five. Conceded a couple against Rayo as well. So we've discussed Rafinha. We can discuss him briefly again. Lamine Yamal, though, we had first couple of games, and again, wisely, we were saying it's only a couple of games. Go easy, because he looked a bit sad at one point when he came on and he hadn't played brilliantly and the team had scored a load of goals. But so it was lovely to see Lamine really flying in this game.
Yeah, the first game he was frustrated. The second game, I thought he looked sharper and more like his normal self. And then last night, it's no different. I mean, he's 19 now, he's getting on a bit. But it's no different to any other player. You need that confidence. And that's the only reason he was a little bit miserable. He probably comes away, and I've mentioned it before, come away from the World Cup slightly disgruntled because he wasn't the tournament's best player. Likewise with Pedri, probably went there thinking, okay, and they come back and they think, well, I've won a World Cup, but it really didn't go how I wanted it to go. And that was the mood. I thought the first game was like that. The second game, he looked sharper, livelier. And then this game, it all changed from I mean, he gets an early goal 21 minutes in. From then on, it was the Lamine Yamal of old. We're talking of retro Lamine Yamal, and he's 19. So Rafinha was awesome. Lamine Yamal was fabulous. Loads of changes. I'm liking Xabi Aspas at left back. Although he's meant to be a right back, he's playing on the left. I can see why it is. Balde hasn't gone yet, but I can see why they're willing to make that trade because they got another young player that's come through. Even Andreas Christensen is back in playing again. So again, it's the same thing. Rodri is being eased back into it. Anthony Gordon was excellent. His partnership with Rafinha is serving them well, and really promising because he's still early. But the Rafinha one is the one, isn't it? We're all looking, thinking, how are they going to play? Is it going to be Rafinha? Anthony Gordon, is he going to play up front? Adeyemi, is he going to play up front? Is he going to be a different role for Lamine Yamal? And it's Rafinha. He's the man. I mean, it's an incredible start for a player that's playing out position as a centre forward and
And the
five
first,
goals.
his finishing is superb, isn't it? We know he's a good player. We know he's a hard-working player, and his attitude's always been great and stuff. But his finishing ability as a centre forward, I think, is the I don't know if it's a revelation. That's too strong, but it's a real positive, isn't it? To think, oh yeah, he can just play as a centre forward.
Yep, he's efficient in front of goal. When he gets a chance, he's burying every single one of them. It'd be interesting though where his XG is, and he's on five goals. And he's intelligence. I mean, the last goal of Anthony Gordon, he's in the number 10 position, but he goes on an overlap. Anthony Gordon spots it, back heel to him, and then it's not an easy finish by any means. And likewise for his first goal, he's moving off the ball. He's not a centre forward in the fact that he's playing up there, backing into the centre half and waiting for the ball to feed, to knock it down, to hold it up, to bring other team players into the team. It is genuinely like the PSG front line. I mean, when you see Dembele play, you didn't think, well, he's not playing. He's not playing like Alexander Sola. Mbappe doesn't. Mbappe doesn't play like Alexander Sola. So this need from old guys like me, that ex-centre forwards, that think you need at least one of those. It's not a trend that continues. I still want to see Alaves and Villarreal where they're both playing two centre forwards. I don't want to see centre forwards being made redundant. It's a little bit of a concern, if I'm being honest, that there aren't that. There's millions of wingers. I support Spurs. I don't have any more wide players we're going to buy without buying a centre forward. It beggars belief. And I think, yeah, we've got another winger. We've got two coming back, three coming back from injury. We've bought about four or five this year. So who's actually going to score goals? So there is a trend at the moment towards a team that hasn't got a recognised striker. And there is another team in La Liga that are suffering with this. But I kind of feel they're more desperate to get one or to get one back from injury than Barcelona, Real Madrid. we've all sort of accepted it now that Kylian Mbappe is a centre forward, but he's not in the, he's not a traditional centre forward, but he does better than traditional centre forwards and he scores a goal every game.
Yeah.
So it is a it's a different outlook. And now Barcelona brought in Gabriel Jesus. I'm on board with that one. You know, with the price, he's 29, which surprises a lot of people. He's played for Brazil. He's played for Arsenal. He's played for Man City. And I have seen a lot of comments about laughing at Barcelona for doing it. But it's less than 10 million, isn't it?
It's quite cheap.
29 years old. He's not a novice. He has that fluidity that can link up with what Barcelona are doing at the moment. But he is that he is a genuine centre forward. So it's another option for them.
Yeah.
And Rafinha can't play every game.
Yeah.
I mean, what's amazing is Rafinha's year off last year. I was heavily critical. And, you know, his first couple of years were tough. The season before last, he was arguably the best player in the world. Then last season, because of that level, he tailed off. He had injury issues, got injured in the World Cup as well, missed some matches. I wasn't expecting this from Rafinha this season. I actually said on the podcast, I thought they would sell him because of the amount of money they were spending. And there was talks of Saudi coming in and offering 100 million. I thought they might, you know, having signed Adeyemi, having signed Anthony Gordon, I thought, well, what's going to happen with Rafinha? It's kind of fallen into place. I don't think it's a plan.
Yeah.
The plan was to buy Julian Alvarez.
Yeah. And then I suppose if that was another 100, 120 mil going out, you might have had to sell Rafinha.
Exactly. That's what I thought he would be the one that, all right, he wasn't so good last season. Have we seen the best of him? We're going to spend this much money. Someone's offering that for him. You know, we can't sell Rashford. He's not ours. We're never going to sell Lamine Yamal. The obvious one would have been Rafinha to raise the big money. But Hansi Flick, you know, Hansi Flick, he has to get so much credit for getting the best out of someone like Rafinha that we hadn't seen until Hansi Flick came to Barcelona.
Yeah.
And he's a brilliant player.
Yeah. Funny how it works, isn't it? So about 9 million euros, I think, they paid for Gabriel Jesus. I mean, his goals, he's had a lot of injuries in his time at Arsenal. His goals, he was very promising when he first went to Man City. He never quite fulfilled that early promise, has he? So, but there are plenty of players like that. Rooney Bargy would be another one, wouldn't he? That much younger, obviously. And so you think it's a good opportunity, isn't it, for Gabriel Jesus? Because he'll play
a good
some
opportunity.
Time. Yeah.
Oh, an unbelievable opportunity. Yeah. Rotting away in Arsenal's bench and not getting a game. And that's probably been his problem. He's played for Man City and Arsenal and not ever been a regular first-team player.
But the same...
So your career drifts by and you... you
but it's, the same is going to happen, isn't it? Yeah, but the same is going to happen.
No, so, I think you get more playing time at Barcelona.
Right, yeah.
I think there's more. There'll be more of an anticipation of we do need another player like him. And he probably would have played in the game against Raya, for instance. I think he'll be off the bench. He'll play on, come off the bench. I think he'll get more playing time at Barcelona than he has done at Man City and Arsenal.
But I don't know what level he would have gone to. I don't know how fit he is in order to be a player who starts 35 league games a season or something.
But he won't be expected to, will he?
Yeah,
That's the problem. He'll probably start 20,
right, okay,
and come off the bench in another 25, 30.
Yeah,
in Champions League, Copa del Rey, Spanish Super Cup. I really think it's a wise decision. I really do. If he'd been 33 or 37 in the case of Aubameyang, which they think, it'd be totally different. But he's 29.
Yeah,
he hasn't had much football. He's played for Brazil. I think it's a really wise signing. Even if I'm wrong, not costing them a fortune. I think he's taken a drop in wages to go there.
Yeah, he must have to, isn't it? Yeah.
So cool. he's willing. It's a great opportunity for him. It plugs a gap. It saves him spending 120 million on Julian Alvarez. As I say, that's going to be interesting when we talk about Atleti. What happens there?
Last one. Barcelona sold Hector Fort for 8.5 mil to Real Sociedad. Is that what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's decent money for him, to be honest.
Yeah.
He was one of those up-and-coming ones. Tony Fernandez has gone from 4 million to Venezia in Italy with a buyback clause and a 50% sell-on. they've had to sacrifice some of the younger players. But like Real Madrid, and we've mentioned it in the podcast, it can be. I mean, Victor Muñoz has gone from Osasuna to Liverpool and doing well. But Osasuna, when they bought him from Real Madrid, that Real Madrid had a 50% sell on as well. So it's Hector thought, I wasn't overly impressed with him at Elche last season, and he wasn't a regular there. But going alone can be problematic for a young player, but a permanent move might see him, you know, and flourish at Real Sociedad. It's a good signing for them.
Yeah. Oh, right. You asked a question about Rafinha's XG. I think 4.1, and he scored 5. So it's not
exactly.
It's not freakish, but yeah, it's a good effort. Right, XG. So if his XG is 4.1, that's higher than Atleti's for the whole season. 2.6, apparently, extraordinarily low XG, and yet they've scored quite a lot of goals because the goals they've scored have been really good, haven't they? They've been.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because so they beat Sevilla 3-1 away to Sevilla. So, excellent result. 7 points in their first three games. Only points dropped were against Villarreal. So, that's fine. The worrying thing is, when you look at that, you think, they're not creating anything. And they've got away with brilliant finishes, which is good, well done, but it's not particularly sustainable. You need to start creating a lot of chances and dominating games if you want to challenge for the title.
Yeah, I when I said the Barca and Real Madrid, I was kind of sparring at the moment, using the league games as a continuation of pre-season. Simeone hasn't had that luxury. There's no Alexander Sorloth. There's the issue with Julian Alvarez. Griezmann has left. I think it was 54 goals were absent from those three players from last season. And every game now, we're kind of getting used to what he's trying to do. But every game now, you're looking at Atleti's line, I'm thinking, well, who's going to play up front? I thought it was going to be Giuliano Simeone this week. He kind of did. Alex Baena kind of did. Even Pablo Barrios played a more attacking role than we normally see. So Atleti are forced into this option of playing without an obvious striker. A couple of young players on the bench, but Simeone is sensibly going with the older players, the experienced players, to plug those gaps. First half, they were really good. I mean, second half, they were okay. But the first half, they're really good. And Baena is an interesting one. It looks to me like he's going to be the one that fills the position of Griezmann.
Right.
And when I think back at him about Villarreal, he kind of was playing slightly wider than he played at the weekend. But he was an attacking, creative player. And you could argue that Griezmann played wider as well, and he dropped deep as he got older and he played more central. And I just think that Griezmann leaving is a massive hole for Atleti. But with the way that Baena's playing, he's the obvious replacement for Griezmann. And I think whoever comes in and plays up front, I mean, Sorloth's there, he's not leaving, but he's injured. I have no idea what's going to happen to Julian Alvarez in the next day or so.
But Jonathan David on his way, though, isn't he? So,
yep. So. I mean, they do need someone to play up there. There is no one that resembles a centre forward in the available at the moment. So I think this was a really good performance. Excellent goals. They played really well. The intelligence of top level players to play without a striker, they exemplified. Barrios is playing really well. And it's amazing. There's how many players now, when I see in the league and think, do you know what? He was unlucky to miss out. He was injured last season. That was his big problem. But he's another quality player that the national team can call on. Fermin Lopez, he was injured. He missed out on the World Cup. There's a whole group of players that, for one reason or another, missed out on the World Cup. But Pablo Barrios was awesome at the weekend. Humans look solid. They've got he replaced Koke at the weekend. He looks solid. Cardoso is solid. Koke is solid. But I think Pablo Barrios gives that little bit of magic in midfield. And his link-up play with Baena. Lookman's looking lively as well and sharp at the moment. So I think under the circumstances, this was a difficult game. Sevilla away from home. We have to talk about them. Won their first two games. It's at the Sanchez-Pizjuan. It can be lively in that stadium. It could have been an issue. Atleti could have dropped points and find themselves really trailing Real Madrid and Barcelona, but they didn't. It was a good evening's work for Simeone.
Yeah.
Sevilla are bad as Valencia. But they're the two teams that we do sort of compare that not long ago they were doing great things. More recent for Sevilla than Valencia, of course. But they sold also just before that irritated the manager. They're trying to find a way through without selling anyone else this week. I think there's 17 registered players. It's tough going for Luis Garcia Plaza. But as I made the point, though, if they had money and they were in a good position, he wouldn't get the job. So I think you know, they'd be going for a bigger name. But they were okay. And they're way out of it, which isn't going to satisfy the fans. Don't go and spend any more. Use the young players. You know, use the young players that you've got. Kocharashvili, they bought him last week. He looked really good when he came on. They've got some really good, talented young players. Miguel Sierra, in particular, who scored a goal in this game. He looks good. So I think the Kike Salas and people like the Castrin, they've got to use them. And that's what, you know, that might start to rebuild Sevilla.
Yeah.
That won't satisfy the fans. They've sold loads of players, released loads of players. And despite that, the atmosphere was good until the latter stages when they knew they were losing and they turned their frustration on to the people that own and run the club.
There's no point in asking you about Julian Alvarez because it's deadline day, and by the time everyone listens to it, he'll either will or won't. And so we'll have a think about him afterwards and where he, you know.
I'm predicting a last minute transfer to Spurs.
Yeah. Well, they need
to. I'm joking.
Yeah, need to spend a bit. Also, they need to spend a bit of money.
Yeah, it's working. Paying off.
Ilham Medjai seems to have been saved, Terry. I was thinking, Ilham, what are you doing?
I'm away and I'm working on weekends and I can't watch the Spurs games. It really puts me off watching anything else in the Premier League now. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, oh, we got Brentford. Let's have a quick look. I'm working on this game. It's half time. What the? And then this week, I'm like, look, 0-0. Oh, come on, live it up. Next time I get a chance to look, oh, what the? 2-0. I no idea.
Yes. Anyway,
different podcast.
Yes. Let's do another. Right. Let's do the title contenders, Alaves, shall we? Against Villarreal. Villarreal haven't won a game. They had 76% of possession. They win on the XG. They haven't played badly in any of the games. But so a new manager, and you think, all right, give them a bit of time. Problem is, when you've got 2 points, Athletic, you've got seven.
Yeah.
So
the top two have got nine.
Yeah, and the point that you always make about don't mess up that first bit before the international break, but unfortunately they are,
and 70% of the highlights are VRLs. So you're looking at think attempt, chance. Alaves, Lucas Boye smashing goal, great finish. Alaves are tough opponents. Another night match on a Friday or a Monday for Alaves, which. Their supporters, perhaps not too bad this time of the year when the weather's half decent, but they don't want to keep playing on Fridays and Mondays and like teams like Osasuna and Alaves. But it's a great start for Alaves. I mean, they're relegation. That's all they're thinking about. Can we avoid relegation? Can we stay in the division? Can we at best avoid getting in a relegation scrap? And when I look back now at last season, I look back and I go, doing the game this week, I did the Valencia game, and I thought last season, where did they finish? Just above Redigan. No. They got 9 points from the last, 10 points from the last four games and missed out on Europe by 2 points. And yet, if you take away those points in those four games, I think it was three wins and a draw, and they were the beneficiaries of playing Barcelona after Barcelona had won the league. So you think, I didn't think they finished ninth. Sevilla finished 13th. 1 point above relegation. If you look at the league table and take the points away, you look at Sevilla and go, oh, they're decent. Yeah, they weren't too bad. No, you're 1 point away from it. And Alaves will be thinking, you know, we've got 7 points in the first three games. Can we keep well clear of relegation? Kike Sanchez Flores, I believe they will. And Mariano Diaz, starting games, coming off the bench, he's showing to be a decent option for Kike Sanchez Flores, who plays two up front. Tony Fernandez, Lucas Boye, Villarreal play two up front. But I agree with you, Nico Perez. There's so much I like about his team, how they're playing, but they need to start scoring goals.
Yeah, Yeah. However, unbeaten are Deportivo La Coruña, a 3-1 win over Valencia. So you can we can focus whichever way you want, Terry. We can do the negatives of Valencia, the positives of Depo. We've spent a bit of money.
Yeah, we could
Not
both.
yeah, not on Aubameyang. Aubameyang and a couple of own goals in this one, but he's 37, and I know people we keep going on about him being 37. The goal celebration. He can still do the old spring thing, can't he? He's honestly, what an athlete that fella is. It's unbelievable.
And the goal.
Yeah, oh
I mean,
yeah.
he's played, I think it's Mario. I really enjoyed doing Depot at the weekend. I've watched them, but when you commentate, of course, you really get stuck into it. And I enjoyed. I think they've spent, is it 26 million, but they've spent it really well. And you look in, you think they've got the experience of Aubameyang. They brought him in. They've now brought in Adama Traore, who's experienced as well. He's only 30. He's another one of those you think, oh, he's only 30. He's been around a long time. So, but then they brought some really good young players as well with a sell on, the potential sell on value. So the 26 million, I mean, we're saying it's a lot of money for La Liga, a newly promoted club. It barely is money you find down the back of a sofa for a Premier League team. But it's, I think they've really spent it well. The two centre backs, one was 19, Bright Ede, great name. He messed up for the goal. But other than that, I mean, that was the best cross Umar Sadiq had all match. He plays a foolish pass across his own penalty area into the chest of Umar Sadiq, who then has an easy chance to finish. But he's 19, and the other one is Lucas Nubi, who's 21. They were excellent. I mean, they were really, really good. So again, I think they're buying, they've spent money on good young players. And Matuidi in midfield is another player that's young and looks good as well. So I really enjoyed watching them. I really, really enjoyed. The big money they spent was on the Roman in goal, which makes sense. You want to recognise the established La Liga goalkeeper. So I really enjoyed watching them, to be honest. I look forward to seeing them more.
Yeah.
Aubameyang, though, he scores from his own half, doesn't he? It's a dreadful free kick from Lluís Rioja. Cleared at the near post. All of a sudden, there's a break on. Soriano slots in behind. And Aubameyang's onside because he's in his own half. He's up against, I think it's Javi Guerra, was one of them. And Rioja was chasing back because he knows he's ballsed up the free kick. And Aubameyang, he gets the first touch and it opens up for him. But he's still got to run fast and strong from the halfway line. And finish it, and it was a lovely finish. His all round play was good. I like the guy that was playing alongside him, and Songo, who's only 21 as well. They played two up front. I really enjoyed watching them at the doing them at the weekend.
Yeah, and Valencia.
Not enjoyed at all. They're a shambles. Corberan, every time you watch Valencia, you don't know if they're going to play three at the back, or four at the back, or five at the back. His micromanagement from the touchline is with all the players now. They have a habit of looking around the bench because they're either looking for help or he's shouting at them the whole game. And I don't see any idea at all from Valencia. Who's going to play up front? Is it Sadiq? Is it Hugo was on the bench? He's chopping and changing. He's searching for a winning formula. The more he does it, the worse he gets. They scored two own goals as well. First one was unfortunate. Second one from Diakabi could have been avoided. They just in one game, they're chopping and changing systems, and it's four at the back, it's five at the back, then it's gone to three, then it's gone to four, then he went all out 4-4-2, and they never crossed the ball. Awful. I'm not surprised though. I'm not putting all the blame on him. I'm looking at the players they're bringing in, and it's a crying shame that Sevilla's issues are more recent. It wasn't long ago they were winning the Europa League, but there was warning signs. The squad is aging. There's no resale value. They're all on high wages. It's led to this, the lack of the way the club is run. But with Valencia, he's going back longer now. And in commentary, I couldn't help bring up the players that Valencia had in the past. To what they're playing now and who they're signing.
Oh, it's an
Crying
amazing
shame.
stuck record, Valencia, isn't it? It's been a long time now where
Yeah.
there'll be young people who listen to us will be thinking, what are you on about Valencia being a big club?
Yeah.
It's just been this shambles for like a decade or something,
They're,
isn't it?
yeah, they're more famous now for this famous stadium, the Mestalla, the passionate support, which gets frustrated. I kind of, yeah, they're not going anywhere apart from suffering. And as I said, they finished just outside Europe last year, but they rallied at the end of the season. If they hadn't rallied at the end of the season, they would have been relegated. And we're talking about a rally of three wins and a draw in the last four matches. And they've got problems again for Leeds. They've got 1 point. That was the first goal they scored at the weekend, and that was given to them by Depor. It was an assist from the Depor player. I just don't see any pattern at Valencia, any consistency. And a manager that is changing things too much every week. God knows what he's going to do next week now after the losing another game at Deportivo La Coruña. I can't predict.
This was the only red card in this game, the one at the end, the random, the classic random, where not quite sure what he's been sent off for, kind of just waving yellow cards around.
Exactly. I wasn't sure. Adri Altamira came on and picked up, but wasn't really clear.
Because if you look at the highlights of it, the last choice is the referee just holding up a yellow and a red card. Don't know, you don't know who he's sending it
He's
off.
only just come on a sub as
There's
well.
no, yeah, there's no context
Yeah.
of it. It's just,
I think it must have been a yellow for a foul and a yellow for.
bit of dissent or something.
Yeah,
Because
which
the only
was
other one was
daft.
the classic one from the Ben Matarazzo got sent off Real Sociedad manager. Almost
And
fingers
he's a
crossed
really
goes on.
calm, he looks to be a really calm guy, doesn't he? Which was when he took over, he's just what they needed. So if he's getting sent off, we're in trouble. There was another sending off somewhere
Oh,
on
was
the
it?
bench,
Right,
but
okay.
it was a coach, and it was like no one knew. Some guy just took the fall. I don't know whether he was guilty of it or not, but he just walked off with his clipboard and kind of took the fall for it.
That'll
But
do.
that was a weird one. Yeah.
Not as many. There have
No.
been weekends where we've had half a dozen of those, and
Yeah.
they're just firing them off. Let's do Real Sociedad. They beat Espanyol 2-1. They needed it. It was their first points, wasn't it? Well taken goal, their first one. Partly it was poor play by Espanyol, wasn't it? And important win, really, isn't it, for Espanyol, I suppose you'd say.
Yeah, Baron Acho's goal was awesome. Really good goal. Likewise, Roberto Fernandez, who was a player that frustrated last year. He was good on loan, wasn't he? Kept them up the first season, so they paid about 7 million for him. He disappointed last season. Kike Garcia ended up scoring more goals. But this season, he's really in form, and that was another good goal. That's important if Espanyol get a younger centre forward on the march rather than Kike Garcia, who's late 30s. If I remember rightly. But Baron Acho's goal was nice. And at my pre-season, looking at the pre-season games and some stuff that Real Sociedad played, I looked at it and I thought, do you know what? I think Oskarsson could be a big player this season for them. And I think the manager agrees. He's playing now. He's the main centre forward. Oyarzabal was playing off of him. And he's delivering. And I think there's a player there. I really do. I think he's all round player. He's a traditional centre forward is good. He's amongst the goals. I think my prediction is he's going to get 15 goals this year for La Real, and that makes them a much better team because they've relied too much on Oyarzabal.
Espanyol have signed Brian Zaragoza, which will be interesting.
Well, he's renowned for just the games against Barcelona, wherever he's played for. So there is magic there, but he's been on loan elsewhere and not really done it. So it'd be interesting to see. I want to see him play on a regular basis and see if he's that good or whether it was just a flash in the pan against Barcelona every time he played them. So, yeah, that's worth the chance for Espanyol.
Right then, I promised an explanation of this at the beginning of the show, Terry. So Levante 5, Betis 2. Where did that come from?
Defending set pieces would be the problem, I think, for Betis. That was a clear one. And it was interesting because you're seeing that there's on one corner, there's no one on the post. Another corner, there is someone on the post. On one corner that they conceded, no one's challenging for the ball. And listen, I'm not suggesting that every club has a set piece coach, but someone's got to do the organisation at Betis on defending set pieces. What are you doing? Are you man to man? Are you zonal? Do you have someone on the far post? It didn't appear to me, despite Pellegrini's experience over the years, that they knew what they were doing from defending set pieces. Bardelli got a wonderful strike. Levante came out, and no, I didn't expect that. I expected Levante to struggle in this game, and I expected Levante to maybe struggle the beginning of the season. But that was a smashing performance from them. In saying that, Bartra scores from a set piece, so it was a lot of stuff that wasn't as organised as you did. Troy Parrott was good. That was interesting to watch. He actually looked in tandem with the team pretty quickly. He was unlucky to have a goal disallowed. He looked good, actually. I could see good things for him at Betis. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yes. But
Betis have to, I mean, in saying that, what do we expect from Betis this season? They're in the Champions League. It'd be great if they get through to the knockout stage, which I think they have every chance. Do we expect them to finish fifth again? I don't know. So
it's feasible, isn't it?
I think La Real will be closer. Athletic should be better. Celta were up there last season and not had them got to a good start. It's feasible, but anything. If Betis have a good run in the cup, if they finish in a European spot and qualify out the group in the Champions League, that would be a good season. So it's a little bit of a surprise that they get beat so heavy at Levante. But I think their expectation levels are pretty reasonable. And I think Betis supporters are thinking, we're going to win the league this year, or we're going to get close to the other, you know, the top three. So they just have to shake this one off, but must do better at defending set pieces, particularly corners.
I mean, you mentioned Celta Vigo, the bottom of the league, aren't they? And on all the stats, I think they're the worst as well, in terms of many of the stats that you look at as well. Lost 2-0 to Athletic. A lovely finish by Berenguer for the first one. And it was a nice move for the second goal, wasn't it, from Athletic? And it's amazing what you do when you don't shoot yourself in the foot. It's from the first two games.
It's been a complete full start for Athletic, hasn't it? And it was a slight concern. You think, I want to see Athletic do better. I want to see them. Interesting, the goal scorers, Berenguer and Navarro, hadn't started before this match. And they get two goals quick to each other. Berenguer's was a lovely goal. So likewise, team goal from Roberto Navarro, Robert Navarro. They're awful defending from Celta for the first goal. And it's Javi Rodriguez, who's one of the three centre-backs, allows Berenguer all the time. He wants to just bend it with his right foot. It was a lovely finish. Lovely piece of attacking play. Nico Williams on the bench. It was Iñaki Williams up front instead of Guruzeta. It was a little bit, few changes from Terzic, but they looked really good. I've got the midfield player, Beñat Garena-Barena. Just to let a secret out, I've split up Garena-Barena. So it's almost like he's got three names. I will get used to saying it properly. He's been good. They've added some players. Payo Canales is another one who looks good as well. Sanset looks to be in good form again. Yes, there's going to be the problem with the centre forward. Sanadi and Guruzeta. Iñaki Williams doesn't appear to me to be able to play wide anymore. It just doesn't look fast enough anymore. But maybe playing down the middle might help them.
Yeah. Okay. Racing Santander beat Elche about 3-2. They were coasting. The 3-0 up after half an hour, weren't they? And then it got close. Yasser Zabiri, Terry, making his first start in La Liga. Got a hat trick.
He did. And he looked thoroughly miserable. I have seen players play and not score goals. I mean, he was completely helped out by the defending of Elche. They look a bit untidy, I have to be honest. Edis Sarabia was their coach. They had this way of playing. I'm not so sure the new coach is wise to continue on with it. It was almost extreme, wasn't it? Tightrope possession football from Elche under Sarabia. The high defensive line, which caused them all sorts of problems in this game. And then their confusion between defenders and the goalkeeper. It wasn't good from Elche. But weirdly, bizarrely, in two of their games, we've conceded two goals in a minute against Villarreal, where they were 2-0 up. And then Villarreal get two goals in 2 minutes. Elche, they're 3-0 up, cruising. I'm looking at it and thinking, it's just under 20 minutes to go. The crowd were in celebration mood. It was going to be their first win in La Liga for 14 years, I think it is. And then out of nowhere, they concede a goal. Bubba Sangare was at fault for one of the goals. He scores. And with a minute, Fernandinho scores a header. Literally, straight from kickoff. So it's 78 and 79. And then the nerves were shredded after that. Really shredded. But they hang on to get the win. But yes, Zabiri, yeah, I mean, it's he got the goals. And the third, all three were mistakes from Elche. But it was a massive win for Racing. Loving the vibe at Depor, loving the vibe at Racing, likewise Malaga. All the things we said about a stadium with an atmosphere in it that's full up. They weren't fortunate to win, but they were hanging on for dear life at the end.
Which leaves us one game. Bordalas said, "Don't disrespect Getafe. We've put them last again." For all the praise that we're giving this round of games, this one is a classic one, a 1-0 arguable penalty. So at 41:35, Gené pulls the shirt of Budimir. At 46:17, he scores the penalty. It's extraordinary.
It is. And there's only a little thing to look at, to be honest. So I'm not sure VAR was totally to blame for this. It took them too long to tell the referee to come to get involved. And then it takes too long for Budimir to take the penalty. I haven't been overly impressed with Osasuna. I kind of feel that they might have gone with a different type of coach than the one they've got that we're still learning about. But it does appear there isn't going to be much change in the style. I think there is a possibility to change the style of Osasuna. Anyway, the penalty is someone blocks Gené. Obvious, clear block. And then when Gené realises that he's lost Budimir because he's been blocked, he clearly pulls his shirt. So I think it's a quick look at VAR. You have to decide, well, actually, Gené has been blocked. That's the first foul. Or ignore that, and then there's a clear pull on the shirt. That's a foul. That's all VAR had to do. And they chose to ignore the block on Gené, which I don't think they should have done, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a clear tactic. Someone steps across him. Ica Munoz, I think it was.
Yeah.
Clear block to allow Budimir to get away from Gené. Who then panics and pulls the shirt. So I don't think it should have been a penalty. Mm-hmm. But why it took 6 minutes to get to that, to score a goal, is bonkers. That's the only time it's happened this season so far.
Yes.
And I don't know why. That just explained it. People can make up their own mind. 20 seconds, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
My opinion of it is said, no, he's been blocked. That's a foul to Getafe.
Yeah, I can see why you'd have a different view on it, but I sort of think, probably there's enough there for a foul because he does. And you're right, the foul, the block by Munoz, and then Gené reaches out. He doesn't have to do it, but then he reaches out and grabs at Budimir and pulls his shirt. And then, the only choice is the first one a foul, in which case, disallow the goal.
And it's a tactic.
Yeah.
That doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
That's a tactic. It's something that you block him, and I've done it in the past, and you block this player and someone else. You know how to block, and it's we're arguing the case for we don't want to see that wrestling at corners with defenders, with attackers. So that was one there. There was an opportunity there to put a stop to the blocking that we often see.
Right, the next round of the next set of games, I don't quite understand. Starts.
I've got no idea at the moment.
starts Thursday with Real Sociedad against Celta Vigo. Betis Real Madrid is Friday night. That's a good game for a Friday night, isn't it? And then
two Champions League teams.
So presumably brought forward because they're playing Tuesday. Yeah. Then you've got three games.
One earlier kickoff? We're kind of drifting towards the earlier kickoffs.
No, not on a Friday. So Saturday.
On Saturday, I mean.
No, 3:15 UK. I'm giving UK times here. So Athletic. Yeah, Athletic.
We haven't had that kickoff.
So there's no Saturday lunchtime one. Yes, three games on Saturday, four games on Sunday, including Barcelona in the earlier slot, the mid afternoon slot at Valencia, and then we've got two games on Monday night with Real Sociedad playing again. So they play twice, and Celta Vigo play again. Yeah, so I don't know what that Celta Vigo. So Real Sociedad Celta Vigo must be from some other time. Must be, some, I don't know. That must have been brought from.
No, I think it's brought forward.
Yeah, it must be.
Why? I don't know.
Yeah, and from when? I don't know either.
Yeah, I think it's a week 6 or 7 fixture brought forward.
Right, yeah, fair enough.
I don't know. Don't ask me.
It would make sense because they're both playing Monday. So they're playing Thursday, Monday, those two teams. Anyway, there we are. All the
but I think
information.
We are getting, at the moment, we've only had 2 games and three on a Saturday, 3 on a Sunday, and sometimes they're overlapping.
Yeah.
Because of the heat, we haven't got to that stage yet where it's comfortable to play at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I don't.
4:15.
I mean, right, I'm not a meteorological expert. Well, but it's no water. It's warmer in the afternoon, isn't it?
That's why we haven't had those games.
No, but we've got. They're playing at that 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. That's when it's hottest.
Yeah, but this is the first week they've done it. So up
yeah.
until now, I don't think there's been an earlier kickoff. Than,
right,
say,
but later in the season, we'll be moving on to, in fact, in a few, so from mid-September, we start moving to the early kickoffs.
Yeah.
And I understand. It's cooler then, isn't it? It's cooler late morning, lunchtime, than it will be at 4 or 5 o'clock when you're kicking off.
Yeah, I just guess if you're at Spain in general, was in Madrid this week, it's boiling. It's like mid to late 30s.
Yeah.
So to play at 2 o'clock is out of the question. 4:15
right.
is probably still out of the question.
While we're on, let's say Seville. Let's have a look at Seville.
That's the obvious one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you...
Right. Wednesday, Seville is going to be 39 degrees, but at 12 o'clock, it's 32. And then by 5 o'clock, it's 39. So it's hotter when they're playing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're waiting to the heat, the real heat of the day before they play, is the thing. If you were worried about it, you'd be playing at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's,
yeah.
Anyway.
I think we normally have this. There's a period of 4 or 5 weeks where... also, it's not as hot in other places
yeah.
in Spain.
Yeah,
so you
true.
Could be playing at Racing, Alaves... San Sebastian, Real Sociedad, Bilbao with Athletic Club. It's not as hot there as it is in Malaga, Sevilla, Barcelona, in Madrid. So they, I mean, Celta would be another place where it wouldn't be as hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but can you arrange the fixtures geographically? Because then those teams might go, oh, this is an unfair advantage. We're having to play at 2 o'clock every week, which is not a favourable kickoff time in Spain on a
yeah.
Saturday. That's normally reserved for Getafe.
I think, yeah.
Alaves is Friday night. Getafe
Yeah.
is 2 o'clock on a Saturday. The same team's playing those weird kickoff times. Valencia
Yeah.
will be born in hot.
Yeah.
So that's Valencia and Levante. Sevilla and Betis.
It's too much. It's 43 on Thursday in Seville. That's too much, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
And we're not having drinks break in every game either.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I didn't bring it up, old man moaning again. The drinks breaks are too long. And when we have the interest now of the microphone being held over the team talk, but it's not happening anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happened. They're not, the managers are not taking part. Watching Simeone do his is weird. He's like, you can see he's fuming. There's a microphone hanging over the top. And someone must do something because it doesn't stay there. So it's either got to be all the teams or no one. You
yeah,
can't have just some
it,
managers.
It needs organising that. If it's a timeout and we're allowed to listen to the timeout, agree that, but don't just have it that the guy goes with his boom mic and tries his best. That's not a solution.
And the managers, the big time managers, have got to do it, or no one does it. We want to hear Jose Mourinho do it with Hansi Flick. I'd love to hear Hansi Flick's one because it's in English.
Yeah.
But also, it's too long. I get the drinks break, rehydrate, but they're too long. It's a full-scale team talk. It takes about 2 minutes for everyone to have their drink, the manager to call them in. We're stretching into 3, 4, 5 minutes for a drinks break. I think that becomes something different then. But in general, we're not having them because it's not hot enough. So it makes sense. The World Cup would have made sense, wouldn't it? If you air-conditioned stadium, we don't need a drinks break. Or it's pouring down with rain in this game, we don't need a drinks break. So I think the La Liga are doing that correctly.
Right. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, everybody. At some point, we'll come back and do another podcast. That's how it works. See you then. Thanks for your support, everybody. Bye-bye.